Ramesh.
Hi, John.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Blogging Heads. And we are here the day after the second presidential debate. So you, I think, thought the debate was sort of a draw, right? Tell me if I'm wrong.
Yes, I did. And, you know, as everybody keeps saying, you know, tie goes to the guy who's leading, and I think that's Obama. It may have even been a little bit better than a draw from Obama's perspective in that he's doing a very good job of seeming cool, collected, and, you know, plausibly presidential. So in that sense, I would say, of the three debates, counting the vice presidential debate, this has been it was the Democrats' strongest one.
Yeah, you know, when I watched this debate, I just thought it was an absolute rout for Obama. Everyone in the media was describing it as a draw, or, you know, nothing really happened.
Well, that's because you thought Obama made all the points you would have made if you were in his seat, right?
Right. But that never happens. I'm always sitting there saying, why didn't you say this? Why didn't you say that? And they never said it. This time, you know, my guy actually said what he was supposed to say. That was part of it.
But, I'd like to see a debate where that happened for me sometime, but no, it never has.
Yeah. It's really quite a nice experience, I have to say. You know, instead of wanting to, you know, reach to the television and strangle John Kerry with my bare hands or whatnot, he's actually saying it. But I have to say, I think the polling seems to back up my interpretation. A pretty resounding win for Obama. You know, especially on questions like, I was really struck by the CNN poll, which showed, you know, who was the stronger leader. And that's always been a huge advantage for McCain, and Obama won that.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I think what you are seeing from Republicans, and I mean, of course, there's a slightly different thing going on with the Republican reaction to the debate, where a lot of Republicans seem to be discouraged and gloomy, in part because McCain didn't bring up, you know, Bill Ayers and Jeremiah Wright. Right. And because of that, in part, because of, you know, the fact that obviously, even on the most charitable interpretation of McCain's performance, there was certainly no knockout of Obama. There is more gloom in Republican ranks than I've seen in quite some time. You know, it's a little bit overwrought. I mean, it was always going to be hard for Republicans to win this year.
Right.
And all things considered, given everything that's happened, the fact that McCain is, what, 6 points down in the Real Clear Politics average is actually, you know, not all that bad. Of course, Republicans would rather it be the other way around, but I don't think that the pessimism is quite... You know, this it's gotten a little overrun. I also think that the Ayers right sort of line of attack that conservatives think would be so effective might not be actually.
Yeah, you know, well, it's strange. I mean, apparently every time McCain went after Obama in the debate, McCain's numbers just plummeted among people who, you know, had those little dials, which I'm a little skeptical of that measure. But it does seem to be borne out in the overall results where, you know, overwhelming majorities thought that McCain was acting like a typical politician and was overwhelming majorities thought he was attacking his opponent more than Obama was. And the likability and favorability ratings really kind of shot up for Obama and didn't for McCain so much. So, you know.
Well, I mean, if you're going to take shots like that, it seems to me that, you know, given the public's dislike of sort of negative campaigning and meanness and perceived meanness and so forth, you're going to have an impact because the shot is repeated, because it's amplified by the press, because it becomes it drives a story over the next few days. And in that respect, I think both that instantaneous reaction, I mean, if that strategy works, then both the instantaneous reaction as the debate is going on and even the snap poll right after it is not going to capture the effectiveness of that. But I don't see anything that happened last night that is going to have that effect for McCain.
That's right. No, I mean, it may just be the kind of thing where he has to rely on the news media and Palin and sound bites to do the job. But if people watch him making that debate, making that charge, and especially, you know, watch Obama getting to respond to it, it's much, you know, it's going to backfire for McCain, whereas he basically can't do it to his face, but he needs to, you know, do it in a form that Obama doesn't have the response, and he doesn't have to be making it himself.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, fundamentally, I think the problem isn't so much that whether he's attacking or sort of he's sour or nasty. It's just the choice of targets. I don't think is particularly effective. And I don't think the sort of the one the conservatives are urging on him would be all that effective either. I think Fannie and Freddie, for example, you're getting attempting to tie Obama to them. It's getting a little bit closer. But I mean, the problem with it is it doesn't really tell you anything sort of going forward as to who's better equipped to handle the mess that we're in, as opposed to who might arguably have done a better job of preventing it had they been listened to in 2005.
Right. I basically think McCain is actually in a lot of trouble now, and I don't think there's anything he can really do. I think his best chance would have been going back months to run hard to the center and provide a lot of ballast for this very positive image he had, which made him so popular, so much more popular than any other Republican, as the maverick, the moderate, the person who stands up to his own party. Basically, you know, the only data points he can ever summon to support that now are things that happened a long time ago, and many of which he's actually abandoned. He talked about his climate change bill with Joe Lieberman, but he voted against it this summer. He's just run a much more conventional campaign. I think he would have had a pretty decent shot if he followed the Mike Murphy Weaver advice all along.
Yeah, well, I mean part of the problem there, I mean, I do partly agree with that analysis, is that the party base following the 2006 election convinced itself that the problem, that what had led to defeat in 2006 and to disappointment before then was a failure to sort of stay with the true conservative path. And that, I think, had an effect throughout the primaries. It created this dynamic where the whole debate was who could be the truest and most rigid Reaganite, even in an environment that's very different from 1980. Although in some ways it seems to be becoming more like 1980 all the time.
Exactly, yeah.
I think, there's also been a sort of a lack of imagination and creativity on the part of the McCain vote. I mean, unlike, I suppose, some of your colleagues at the New Republic, I think McCain's got a decent health care plan, which I guess would be an exception to that rule. But it sort of seems to come in and out of focus. You get a clearer... you get a clearer picture of what it might be from listening to Obama and Biden than you do from listening to McCain. I mean, I don't think it's sort of, an accurate picture when it's given by Obama and Biden, but they at least sort of give you a picture. Whereas McCain, I mean, and this is also true of his most potentially popular tax proposal, the doubling of the exemption for children. And as you know, John, pro-family tax reform is a big cause of mine.
Yes.
He doesn't seem to have a real handle on this proposal. And you can tell it in the very casual, imprecise way that he refers to it on the rare occasions that he refers to it at all.
Yeah. Well, he's clearly not a policy wonk. I would agree with you that Obama and Biden are pretty unfair. They're literally accurate, but pretty unfair in talking about the tax hike that the exposing health benefits to taxation, removing that deduction. I think Obama was absolutely fair and deadly accurate in taking apart the deregulatory nature, basically allowing, essentially eliminating, for all intents and purposes, state regulations on health insurance. And, I don't even think McCain tried to, nor should he have tried to defend that provision.
Well, I mean, yeah, look, there's no question that that a choice of state regulatory regimes would tend to inhibit regulation, and indeed that is the point of it. Although, by the same token, I mean, I believe in, market competition and so forth. I think that some of the things that people are most concerned about would be generated by the market anyway.
Yeah.
And in that respect, I disagree with, say, the analysis of your colleague Jonathan Cohn on this point in Republic's blog.
I agree with John that it's a race to the bottom. And my favorite, and it did lead to my favorite moment where you used the analogy, I think the great analogy, of Delaware and credit cards.
Right, and you hate Delaware.
And I do. This is a cause near and dear to my heart. And he, you know, talk about having the guts to take on your own party. He took on his own running mate.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of that between Obama and Biden. No, I mean, what you were saying about Obama's relative accuracy, I think that's right. I mean, I don't think, I mean, actually for all of the heat that these things have generated, I don't think this has been on either side a particularly dishonest or dishonorable campaign, although I thought Biden was a little bit – Biden was, I think, significantly faster and looser with facts than Obama was last night.
Yes, he you're right. He was. I do think that McCain has – as you may know, I wrote an article about this in the previous issue of the New Republic. I do think McCain has been pretty, you know, dishonorable is a pretty subjective idea. I would tend to agree with it, but I'd be, you know, you have to be careful about letting your own perspective play into like a charge like he's dishonorable, he's more dishonorable than somebody else, because that's so subjective. But I do think, you know, in terms of the number and the severity of untruths, and the centrality that they've played within the campaign has been startling, much more than Obama, and much more really than almost any other campaign that I can think of. I just week after week they just make up stuff. They just come up with these preposterous claims and make it their message of the day, which is they're just making things up out of whole cloth. And I agree that all politicians do this to some extent. I agree that Obama has done this from time to time as well. But I do think you're seeing it much, much worse with McCain.
See, I just don't think that anything that either side has done matches, say, the concerted attempts by the Democratic ticket in 2004 to persuade young people that a reelected Bush would mean a renewed draft. I mean, that really was invented out of nothing.
Who said that? Kerry never said that.
I have to go back and check, MTV, but I'm pretty sure that there was a lot of that there was a, in addition to, you know, party organizations and allies, that Kerry did in fact have innuendo to that effect.
I don't think that's right. I think MTV said that. I think you had some liberal bloggers doing that. But if you want to apply that standard, then my God, think of all the stuff that we could impute to McCain. You know, I mean, McCain is the one who's out there who's using the same phrase, "Who is Barack Obama?" that you're seeing in these viral smear emails.
In the what? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
He's using this "Who is Barack Obama?" line. Mm-hmm. That's the exact same line that you find repeated in all the viral smear emails against Obama. And I don't think that it's accidental that he's repeating that phrase and trying to activate that and sort of, you know, very subtly kind of endorse those claims that, of course, he doesn't want to attach himself to.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess there's another place where I just part company with you. I mean, I think we've seen "Who is a Barack Obama?" Asked in a lot of contexts by a lot of people, and I think it's much more likely that, you know, McCain would and his people would pick that up from, say, a Charles Krauthammer column than from some viral email. And I also don't think that Charles is picking it up from viral emails. But, you know, one of the tropes of this election season has been that sort of, you know, McCain has suddenly become much less honorable. And, you know, there was a good old McCain, and now he's you know, taken off the gloves and gotten dirty. And I just think, look, I mean, I don't say this as particularly a reflexive defender of John McCain. I mean, in 2000, when he was attacking George Bush in the primaries as anti-Catholic, I mean, that was pretty much bogus, and it's hard to believe McCain ever really believed that Bush was seriously anti-Catholic. But a lot of the people who are pounding him now, you know, they didn't care because, you know, he was hitting Bush, and that was fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're... Tell me if I'm mischaracterizing your view. Your view is that essentially very little has changed about his style or his honorability, except that he's become the Republican nominee running against a Democrat. So all of a sudden, you know, his admirers and mainstream press have turned against him. Is that your view?
Well, no. I mean, I wouldn't say that nothing's changed. I mean, I think a couple of things have changed. I think, for one thing, the issues that he emphasizes have changed. and his sympathies, I think, have changed, right? I mean, he may be sort of in the same place on, say, HMO regulation and the war as he was in 2002, but, you know, the relative importance he's giving to these things and how it's coloring his actions, the alliances he makes and so forth, that's changed. A lot of it's circumstance-driven. I mean, I think he genuinely sort of was appalled by what he saw as, you know, bad behavior on the part of liberals and the left over the last few years on foreign policy. I would just say that the extent of his sort of makeover has been exaggerated.
Right. I mean, exaggerated. I'm sure there are people who have exaggerated a bit, but I do think that there is something there.
There's something there. I mean, look. I mean, the tax cut thing, I think, is a pretty clear example of an actual flip flop on a key issue. And you just know that last night when Obama was hitting the tax cuts, McCain wanted to say, "Hey, I voted against them," but you know, based on the previous flip flops, he couldn't do it.
Right. I mean, on the environment, on torture, on a lot of big issues.
The environment and torture, I think, are issues where I think that the extent, and immigration for that matter, I think the extent of McCain's flip-flopping has been exaggerated. Unfortunately, I mean, actually, I wish he'd flip-flop more on some of this stuff. But, right. I mean, as far as I can tell, I mean, he's still committed to the concept of cap and trade. You know, he's still committed to a comprehensive immigration reform that includes what I would call an amnesty and a guest worker program.
Right, but he refused to endorse. He said he wouldn't vote for his own bill. The cap and trade legislation that he touted at the debate as being his plan, basically he voted against. On torture, they basically had one key vote to do basically what he says he wants to do in torture, and he turned against it. There's a lot there where he seems to have changed.
Well, look, I mean, you can make, I think, a coherent case for supporting both the original McCain amendment and
the estate
torture.
Tax.
I'm sorry, go on.
You know, tax cuts in general, progressivity in general, the estate tax in particular. I mean, this was one of his great causes. You talk about Teddy Roosevelt and these great fortunes and how it's awful, it's a moral cause. And now he thinks that the estate tax is the least fair tax in the whole books. I mean, you can't change any more than he's changed.
Well,
he went to the left. He went to the left of me, to the right of you.
Yeah, I guess that's right. Well, we could run Mitt Romney. I mean, it is in fact possible to change on more things than John McCain has.
Yeah. Now, sorry. Go ahead.
No,
look. I mean, the other thing is, I would say, you know, I think a lot of McCain's admirers in the press, in general, I think, have failed to figure out what was going on for a very, very long time. And I think one of the reasons they've been so shocked is they just were asleep at the switch while McCain, starting in 2004, just moved sharply to the right and began doing everything he possibly could to insinuate himself in the Republican base. And I think they just didn't get that was happening, or anywhere near the extent that it was. They continued to, you know, give him the extraordinary benefit of the doubt, which he's enjoyed for so long in his career. So, for instance, you know, he was just like running very hard on the war and the surge, and everyone in the mainstream press was saying, "Look at this brave noble," which is what McCain would. They're basically buying McCain's line about what he was doing, saying he's risking his own career, you know, nobly standing up for an unpopular cause, which it was unpopular among the general public, but it wasn't unpopular among Republicans. Among Republicans, this was his bridge back to the good graces of the Bush administration and the party loyalists. He was doing exactly what he needed to do to get elected, which is not to say he didn't believe it. I'm sure he did believe it.
Well, there were close advisors to McCain in 06 and early 07 who were extremely concerned that he was becoming too identified with the surge, and particularly in 06 that he should actually sort of move away from supporting the war. And you could easily see a scenario.
Hold on, John.
You can easily see a scenario where the surge was failing, was clearly failing in the middle of 07 and late 07. And at that point, I think a lot of Republicans would have moved on. I mean, they were already sort of not particularly enamored of John McCain. And at that point, they could have said, well, we just can't, you know, in addition to everything else we just like about the guy, we cannot be running Mr. Surge. So the risk, I think, wasn't so much based on a snapshot of Republican public opinion at any moment. It was on the possibility that the surge would actually fail. And that, right, I think, was a serious danger for him.
I don't see why, though. I mean, I could certainly see that being a risk for him if he attained the GOP nomination and had to run in the general election. But among Republicans, Bush remained and remains to this day very popular. And the war remains popular. And the surge is popular. And the overwhelming risk McCain had as a Republican candidate was that he would be seen as too moderate, too disloyal, not Republican enough.
Sure, but John, I mean, if the surge had failed, there would have been massive Republican defection in late 2007, early 2008. I mean, there was almost something like that in late 2006 that was sort of headed off by a peculiar combination of factors. I mean, I think
among
had the surge failed, this would have played out very differently, and not only in a general election, it would have played out differently in the primaries as well.
Yeah, no, I don't buy that. I mean, I think I think you had people who were hardcore with Bush and were staying with him. That was happening with the war in general for several years, and you weren't seeing defections among the Republican base. You were seeing a lot of nervousness among Republican elites, but you weren't seeing the Republican base turn against the war, even when the war was going as badly as it possibly could have.
Yeah, well, I would say the enthusiasm of the base was, at least those sections of it that I have fairly regularly exposed to, was declining and could not have hung in for much longer without having something to hang on to. And, and the success of the surge, obviously, since it's sort of all you hear about from conservatives talking about the Iraq War, was that something.
Well, we're on a side point, but suffice to say that if I was hired as John McCain's political advisor back then, I would have told him to run as hard on the surge as he possibly could and stick with that and run it all the way. That's exactly the advice I would have given him.
So, to return to something that we were talking about, or at least that I talked about earlier, if you were his political advisor, what would you advise him to do anything with Wright and Ayers?
Now?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Honestly, I mean, I think his chances are very, very grim. I do think he needs to throw the long ball. I don't know if that's enough of a long ball. I honestly think, I may blog this later. I would advise him.
That's why we're here, John, to generate blog ideas for you.
I mean, I don't think you're going to take this advice, but honestly, I think this is the kind of long ball he needs to do. I think if I were him, I would fire Steve Schmidt, hire Murphy or Weaver, and say, he made a terrible mistake in the tone of this campaign. He allowed himself to, do the Al Gore, basically what Al Gore did after the 2000 election. Just say I took bad advice from my advisors. I'm letting it rip. I'm going to be the old John McCain. Talk to the press, do the whole thing. They'll swoon. They'll fall in love with him again. You'll have trouble with the base, but the base has already been convinced that Barack Obama is a terrorist lover. They're already in love with Sarah Palin. You'll lose some of the base, but, it's your only chance to get back at the middle. You've got to just hope that the base is going to suck it up and vote for you. I think, I'm not saying it's a great chance to win, but I think that would be his best chance.
Yeah, well, not going to happen. I mean, the two things that I have most wanted the McCain campaign to do this year was, first, make a one-term pledge tied to getting a mandate on four or five issues, and two, come out with a serious pro-family middle-class tax cut. And obviously my advice has not been terribly persuasive, or they're not reading National Review and National Review Online.
Well, I have to say a one-term pledge now, given that a majority of the public thinks Palin is unqualified to be president, would be pretty weak, don't you think?
I've always been a Palin skeptic, for a lot of reasons, but I'm actually not, I've never been concerned about the idea that she's going to be elected president, in 2012. I think even if McCain wins, she's by no means, assured of getting the Republican nomination in 2012. I mean, although I also think that McCain isn't, in fact, I mean, if he were somehow to win, he wouldn't serve more than one term. And that's part of what's sort of frustrating about this. I just don't believe he actually wants to serve two terms.
You know, On Palin, I'll just pass along something I heard. Not that I find this, you know, whatever, anecdote you hear from your brother, your friend, whatever. This is, it's more amusing than, you know, something that I think is necessarily reflective of widespread sentiment. But so someone who's visiting friends in the Midwest and was talking to a guy who was, a real working class, actually has been out of work for a while, saying, like, this whole neighborhood, and this is a blue-collar, white neighborhood, he expected to go for Obama. He said, why? He said, well, they basically figure that, this is kind of grim, they're not wild about Obama, but they basically think that some redneck is going to kill him, and then a Biden, who they like, will be president. but they don't want McCain because they think he's going to have health problems and die, and that, quote-unquote, that idiot, which is how they refer to Palin, will become president. So he claims that all his friends basically have expressed expressed this belief.
All right, I want to see somebody go in the field and do survey research on these expectations, subdivided by demographic group. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, now look, I mean, if it was if the tickets were flipped, I suppose I would probably favor the Democrats over the Republicans and. Who am I kidding? I still wouldn't. But
no, I don't think so.
But it would be a tougher call for me.
Yeah.
Well, and on that note, I think we need to call it a day here.
Right.
As always, once nice again, talking to you, gentlemen.
Yeah, sorry. Once again, I've interrupted you, and once again, it was nice talking to you and frequently interrupting you.
All right. Take care.
Okay, Rash.